Well, welcome everyone to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything we talk about is aimed at helping you lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in anxious times. My name is Irvin Nugent, and today, as always, I welcome my co-host, friend, and collaborator, Bridget Tyer. Bridget, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great, Irvin. Thanks for asking. We're recording this in March. I live in the Washington, D.C. area. It's blustery, it's sunny, and it's a harbinger of spring to come. So that gives me a little pep in my step.
Nice, nice, nice. It's also St. Patrick's Day.
Yay.
And I can officially confirm that I have not taken a pint yet. So is this when this podcast ends, I may. So I'm not under the influence as we're speaking.
I think that's probably a wise choice on your part.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited because I believe this is the second time only in the history of our podcast that we have had a guest join us. And so, Irvin, tee this up for folks.
Yeah. So I'm super excited about this episode today. You know, recently we did have an episode about curiosity from the perspective of a leader and how a leader approaches curiosity. And of course, we did that because the Harvard Business Review had come out with this survey which said, like, if you want to make it as a leader, one of the qualities that you need to have in the future is creativity. Well, lo and behold, friend of mine, Dr. Amy Clymer, comes out with a brand new book recently in the last couple of weeks. And the book was called Deliberate Creative Teams, How to Lead for Innovative Results. So I thought, hey, let's have another episode, but this time really focusing on team dynamics and leadership. And how do we approach creativity from that perspective? So, Amy, you're here. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so wonderful. Well, I think before we get on to our discussion, let me introduce you. Let me tell our listeners all the wonderful things about Amy. I've known Amy now quite a few years from the National Speakers Association. She is dynamic in so many different areas and specifically on this area of creativity. So Dr. Amy Clymer is a speaker, trainer, and a coach, and she teaches teams how to innovate on demand. And she's the author of Deliberate Creative Teams, How to Lead with Innovative Results, which just came out. And that's really about helping leaders understand how to increase creativity in their teams. She hosts the Deliberate Creative podcast, and she is the designer of Clymer cards. These are these wonderful cards which she designed, which help creative processes. You can use them in so many different areas. I've seen it in action in a conference that we were at. And these are a creativity team building tool. Amy has a PhD in leadership and change, which is kind of important in today's world, which is all about change. So, Bridget, I'll hand it over to you. Why don't you ask the first question there of Amy?
Yeah, well, so as you were introducing Amy, the first thing that went through my mind was that I have had so many clients tell me over the years, you know, I'm not very creative. It's become such a common theme that it has really struck me that it seems like most of us don't think we're creative unless we're in the creative arts, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that has to do, I'm wondering, does it have to do with how we define creativity? And so maybe that's a really good place to start, is with the basics, right? So Amy, you know, what is creativity and why, and like, why does it matter?
Yeah, Bridget, I have the same experience with many of my clients where they tell me they're not creative. And I think there's two reasons people say that. And one is, like you're suggesting, that they don't quite know what it is or defining it in a different way. So the way I define creativity, I shouldn't say I, this is from the research around creativity, that creativity is novelty that is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
So novelty meaning unique, different, new, original, and valuable. Could be financially valuable. It could be something that makes us more efficient. It could be aesthetically valuable. It might just make us feel good. There's all sorts of, you know, definitions of the word valuable in this case. But creativity is novelty that is valuable. And so basically, it's just about solving problems. Are you coming up with some solutions that work well for whatever's going on? That's it.
I love that definition. Now, novelty, does novelty mean like, there's never been anything like this before?
Not necessarily, no. In fact, I would say that's actually very unusual. And even when we think about the things in our world and in our lives that are creative, that we really uphold as like, oh my gosh, this is just one of the most innovative things ever. We sometimes think that it was the first of its kind, but actually when we look at the history of that thing, whatever it is, we see it's quite iterative. So for instance, I think one of the most popular is smartphones, the iPhone in particular. It's like, did Apple invent this, that smartphone? No, not at all. There were other iterations before this. There were, you know, it wasn't the first phone that could play videos. It, you know, there were so many, I don't know all the details, but basically the point is it was iterative. And that's a big, big piece of creativity. It doesn't have to be something that no one's ever thought of in any context ever. It's that in itself is very unusual.
So that's interesting, you know, because I love this. I love the definition as well, kind of novelty that is valuable. And I think that's so accessible. And therefore, I think therefore it's really clear the link between that and how valuable that would be at work. You know, yeah, because at the moment, you know, especially when you're running into a dead end of a problem, kind of being able to approach it. So I'm curious then, Amy, from your own experience and your thinking about this, how might we go about incorporating creativity into the work and the work process?
Okay, so Irene, first I just have to say, you just used a great phrase. I don't even know if you knew you were using it.
No.
But the question, how might we?
Yes.
That is a really powerful phrase. I talk about that in the book. And usually what happens is people say, how should we? How could we? How will we? How do we? And so asking, you know, how should we incorporate creativity in our workplace versus how might we are really quite different questions. Because how should we is implying there's one right answer and what's the way? I want to know the right thing. And how might we is implying this sense of possibility. And it's like, well, we're not looking for the right answer yet. We're just exploring what are the options. And so that's actually, it's just so funny you asked it that way, because that's one of the tactics and or tools that I recommend that organizations use. So now that I went into that whole thing, I don't even remember what the question actually was.
Let me do it again, seeing that I've given this such a wonderful, wonderful question. How might we incorporate creativity into the workplace?
Okay. I think there's many layers to this. Like many, you know, if you're bringing something new into the workplace, there's going to be layers to it. The first thing is to understand that creativity is a system. And I know you all talk a lot about systems here, which is so perfect, that it is not just this one-off thing that you do. It's also not something that some people have and some people aren't. So let's put all the creative people together in a room. No, actually, as humans, we all have incredible creative capacity. And I think if you're trying to incorporate creativity into your workplace, that's the first thing, is to understand the system. And in the book, I walk through these three elements that all teams need if they want to be creative together, which we can get into if you want. But for leaders and team members to understand how it works can be really eye-opening, mind-blowing, because we think of creativity as, oh, it's just this like free-for-all. And actually what I'm suggesting is that it's quite a structured process. Mm-hmm. And when you follow this system or this process, your results are like, I mean, the research says like your results will be more creative if you follow the process.
Love that. And you know what made me just smile is, Amy, when you said, just saying, how might we? That's such a coaching question, right? Mm-hmm. So those of us who have been trained as coaches, all three of us, that's just how that has been pounded into to us. You know, like I was just drafting an email and I literally, you know, I typed something and then I went back and I edited it and I said, how might we, you know, mm-hmm. do that? But what I never did was connect that to being creative or to opening up a more creative conversation. So that's such a great and easy takeaway for our listeners, you know, like right away.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I've also had like a lot of my clients have said, I'm not creative. And a lot of my leadership clients have said, my team is not very creative. Like they're not coming up with new great ideas. Like, what do I do? And so I would love to hear like, what is the leader's role in this whole structured process of being creative and innovating?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the leader's role is very critical and very important. Let me just give you like these three elements that teams need in order to be creative together, because then I think we can break those down and answer that question. So I did this research maybe 10 years ago of looking at why are some teams highly creative and some aren't? So really this question you're asking. And I had certainly been on teams that fell on either end of the spectrum throughout my career. And I was curious, you know, what's the difference? Why am I able to be more creative with some teams, other teams, I just feel like, oh my gosh, I just sit at the table and I'm less creative with them. And what I identified were these three elements that all teams need in order to be creative together. These are not actually in order priority. I just have it sitting at the top of the Venn diagram. The first one is team purpose. So what's the team purpose? Why are we here together? Why do we meet on a regular basis? This one's a little, to me, feels like one of the easier ones. It's just most teams like have this figured out. And if not, it's a pretty easy fix. So team purpose, team dynamics, which is simple, but can be complex of how do we communicate with each other? Do we have a fairly high level of trust, level of psychological safety? And can we engage in conflict, like some healthy conflict around the work? And then the third area is team creative process. And this is, do team members all know and use a process for being creative together? And this is the circle in the Venn diagram that most people are like, wait, what? There's a process? And so that's where I end up as a consultant spending a lot of time with teams on that circle. So I think for leaders, the first thing for them to do is just understand how this works. Mm-hmm. But then to really think about what is the process of your meeting? How are you facilitating your meetings? And are you, there's, I feel like the default way that people facilitate, team leaders in particular, is they open up, you know, when they want to generate some ideas, they just say, hey, what ideas do you all have? You know, they basically just set up this brainstorming and they want people to just like shout out ideas. And that tends to favor a very certain type of person, the highly extroverted, the person that thinks quickly. Maybe they've already given some thought to this particular problem, the person that's comfortable throwing ideas out on the table no matter what. And
like Irvin, his favorite is Irvin.
Is that you, Irvin?
Yeah, that's me. Very guilty. Yes.
I tend to be in that category. It kind of depends on the context. But then what ends up happening is you got maybe out of 10 people, three or four people that are talking the most, and they're going to shift the entire conversation to their direction. And the rest of the group is not really engaged. So there's all this research that shows that classic brainstorming technique is actually one of the least effective ways to generate ideas for most teams. There's a few exceptions, but so what I recommend is change the process, change the technique of how you're generating ideas. So for instance, start off and give everyone a post-it note or a stack of post-it notes and say, we're going to take 3 minutes and I'm going to set a timer. And in those 3 minutes, see how many ideas you can get for our particular problem. And then get all those ideas on paper. After 3 minutes, everyone stops, and then you start sharing the ideas and literally just go around and hear from every person and put those ideas in the middle of the table or on the wall or something. This is not time consuming. The whole thing could take less than 15 minutes, or you could have it take much longer depending on the level of the problem. But shifting that one thing is going to generate more ideas, and it's going to get every single person involved in generating ideas.
Love it. And such an easy tweak.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Your answer to the question of what can leaders do? Well, one is change the way you facilitate these conversations, you know? But I think the other thing in your Venn diagram that's so important is ask yourself, how clear is our team purpose? Mm-hmm. And how healthy are our team dynamics? Because that's going to affect, you know, the quality of conversation and the risks that people will take and so forth.
Absolutely, 100%. Mm-hmm. And what I found, and this is, I think, particularly for leaders to know, is that a lot of times the leaders are fairly clear about the team purpose, but they've never actually talked about it with the team. And so sometimes team members aren't clear. And a simple way to figure that out, and you'll learn soon, I'm a big fan of post-it notes. Pass out some paper, post-it notes, note cards, whatever. Have everyone write down what they think the team purpose is, and then just put them in the middle of the table, shuffle them around, figure out, are these all the same? Are they all over the place? Are we in alignment? Are we not? You know, and then you can have a deeper conversation. Yeah, I think you're right. Absolutely. Getting clear on that is a really good first step.
Mm-hmm. I think I can understand as well, what I really appreciate around the dynamics issue, that if the psychological safety is not there, or perhaps there's reticence around being able to deal with conflict, or just conflict feels bad, that that's really going to have a relationship with how creative a team will be. And I'm curious, Amy, kind of like, is this a horse and a cart situation? Like, do you have to kind of work on psychological safety and conflict management before you get to creativity, or do they play in well together? Like, what's your observation around that with a team?
I think that's a tough one. I feel like it's sort of this spiral, like this upward spiral, and that we, you know, we do a little work on creativity, and then we do a little work on conflict, and then back to creativity. And we're just sort of going in this circle, hopefully upward. And they complement each other so well. And I think it's really hard to say, okay, now we're going to work on conflict. And then you just, you know, only work on conflict. Well, the way to work on conflict is to do the work together, which means you're being creative together. And then something will come up that'll give you the opportunity to work on conflict. And you can kind of see how this could go round and round.
Yeah.
But I do think one of the biggest things is don't avoid it. Like, embrace that conflict. And there's this great phrase or great word that I love called creative abrasion. Mm. And it's this type of conflict, I talk about it in the book, where we can disagree around the ideas, around the work we're doing, but we're not disagreeing around personality or identity.
Yeah.
Because that's never helpful.
Yeah.
And if team members are able to focus on that type of conflict, it can be really powerful and in a positive way.
Mm, love that.
Can you say something more about the identity part? Mm. I think everybody gets naturally, like, don't insult a human being, right? Like, the first thing is personality. Don't say like, well, you're this, you know. Mm-hmm. But identity, I think that's a big one. But what does that mean?
Yeah, identity simply is, you know, gender, your sexual orientation, your ethnicity, race, you know, all of those things that, I mean, even, you know, are you a parent? Are you, where'd you grow up? What part of the country or part of the world? I mean, all of these things that make up our identities, that if you are, somebody says something like, oh, great, here comes the Southerner again. You know, and they're got their drawl going. You know,
yeah.
I live in North Carolina. That's not helpful. That's never going to be helpful. If you are dismissing someone because of an identity they hold, I think what's much more powerful is to truly listen. And then if you find yourself quickly wanting to dismiss it, maybe do a little check. What's that about? Mm-hmm. Is that about their identity? Is that about something that happened 2 months ago that they said that has nothing to do with the moment right now? Mm-hmm. And sometimes just as simple as a pause can be really helpful.
Mm. People's identities are really tied up in their roles.
Absolutely.
And the nature of the work they do. So I think that's another way that we get off track. Mm-hmm. Is we're dismissive of a particular area of expertise or a role that a person plays, you know? Like, you can see like the finance person and like the talent development person, right? Well, you're a bean counter. Well, you just care about soft skills. You know what I mean?
That kind mm-hmm. of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we do the opposite as well, where we might listen more heavily to somebody because of their role or their identity, you know, especially I think that's something leaders have to be careful of. Like, well, you probably carry a little more weight in that team. And so being aware of, you know, just being aware of that dynamic, not saying, you know, step away, but pay attention to it.
Sure.
Yeah. Amy, I'm curious as well, you know, with teams, especially say teams that have been going on for a long time, you know, some things I'll notice are here in coaching is that it's the same old, you know, and it's kind of like they're feeling stagnant and heavy, and which is just the opposite of what you think is creativity. So any suggestions there to kind of add to a team maybe that feels it's hit a wall, or a team that feels stagnant, how they might kind of reignite some creativity on the team?
Yeah, I think there's a few layers. I think first would be making sure they're excited about their team purpose. And, you know, if we can connect back to that, and does that purpose somehow connect with them personally of like, what do you, gets you excited? Yeah. Then that can help maybe just reinvigorate some energy. I also think sometimes what happens in organizations is that team members are asked to do more without letting go of anything else. And so that, I see your facial expressions. I'm guessing you've talked about this before.
many times.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's just a recipe for burnout. It's a recipe for, you know, just like, why would I want to add more without letting go? I mean, I only have so much time in a day, and then I'm going to get dinged in some way for not performing well, or I just don't feel like I mean, I can just tell I'm not performing well, and then I'm not serving well. And so figuring out how can you set up your team and your team members for success? And I think when team members know like, okay, we're going to let go of this other thing if we can do that, you know, this new thing. So then there's just more energy towards trying something on top of what's already there.
Yeah.
It's hard to be creative when you're so stretched thin.
Yes.
You don't even have time to catch your breath.
Yeah.
And that to me is a really big conundrum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's like this inverse relationship. Like as stress goes up, creativity goes down. It's, you know, documented research-wise. And yeah, I know sometimes when I'm wanting to be more creative, if I'm really stressed, I have to figure out like, okay, let me dial that back, or I have to address whatever's causing the stress first before I can engage in being more creative. And I don't know if you all find that in your work.
Yeah, well, very much so. I mean, I it's so interesting. The last month, I've been trying to be a little creative with some new offerings. And so what we, myself, my business partner, Trista, decided was to just to get away to a local hotel. It was a change of space, change of energy, totally made the dynamic very differently. So we could have stayed at home and done a Zoom session, but just that being in person and in a different space just actually was wonderful.
That's awesome. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Now, what you just said, Amy, too, like I was going to ask you, and I still will, what is the connection that you see between creativity and resilience? Because this is obviously the Resilient Leadership Podcast. One of the things that Irvin and I have talked about over and over again is how there's an inverse relationship between high levels of anxiety and how well a team thinks together, right?
Yes.
And how well you think. You know, a little bit of anxiety is useful, a lot, not, you know, and you just kind of mentioned this inverse relationship between creativity and stress. And I think that's very similar.
Absolutely. That's interesting. I was thinking particularly several months ago, a lot about resilience. I live in Asheville, North Carolina, and we were hit by Hurricane Helene really hard. And I feel like, oh, I got really lucky. My house was fine. We had a tree fall in one car, but we were without electricity for 12 days. We had no running water for 17 days. We had no drinking water for 2 months.
Whoa.
And, you know, I mean, even, and my wife and I are campers. Like we have all the camping equipment. Like we know how to live without electricity or without running water. So on one level, this shouldn't have been that hard. But on another level, it was super hard.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, just because looking around, like you're surrounded by, you know, destruction and these stories from other people that were just horrible. And like, you know, you're just trying to figure out how to, for me, I was trying to figure out how to keep my business going. And like one day, well, several days, T-Mobile, they came to our area with these trailers that were just like, 100 plugs around the trailer and like this big tower that they would just jack up because nobody had cell service, nobody had internet. And we would just drive over there and we would set up a camp chair, you know, a little folding chair. And we would sit there for like 3 or 4 hours and work in the parking lot of this middle school. Like, oh my gosh, this is not the ideal context. Anyway, there was a lot of conversation on social media about resilience. And this one person commented on a post. I don't remember if it was my post or somebody else's, but she's like, I am so sick of hearing about resilience because all you're saying is basically just like, put your head down and like plow through. And I don't think that's healthy. And we're thinking, oh, that's doesn't sound like resilience at all. That sounds like a way to burn out.
Denial.
I look at resilience as like, oh, you're figuring out how do I make this work? How do I decrease my stress in this situation so that I can get through this well? How can I get creative about this? I'm curious, like, what, how do you all define resilience?
That one, Irvin?
Well, for us, you know, it's, and we talked about this, Amy, before the show, before we were recording, was, you know, resilience connected with a system, you know, and so therefore there's this, that so often, you know, popular kind of opinion, you know, resilience is you get knocked down and you get up again, kind of like, you know, hey, the hurricane knocked you down, get up again. But really, you know, our resilience, the resilience we're talking about, especially the resilience of leadership, is how does a leader interact with the system that they are part of? And very often that has much more to do with how they're interacting with that system and how they are showing up. And so very often, you know, what we think about is it's how do we kind of respond to others around it? And really it's our own response and how we respond to that anxiety around it that actually builds up the resilience, both their resilience and the system's resilience. And this interaction of, it's not just our own personal resilience, but it's actually building up the system's resilience as well to respond to this anxiety, which is around us. And I think there is, you know, as I think about this, creativity is so important because I think what can happen is we get trapped. We get into a way of thinking that is just, you know, laser focused. And I think creativity can break us out of that.
Yeah. You know, that's one of the things that I saw during this hurricane was the people that were able to think the most flexibly and them able to like, oh, let me try this, or let me try that. Or they were pulling from other parts of their lives. You know, like in our case, we were pulling from this part of our life that goes camping a lot. And we were like, those were the people that survived. I shouldn't say survive, but were able to manage the stress the best. We talked in my house a lot about systems when all this was happening, of like, we need a system for water and we need to figure that out and just do it over and over again so that we're not thinking as much about it. Cause when I was thinking a lot about this stuff takes a lot of energy, like brain power of just, oh, I have to get water every day. And so we developed a system of, you know, we had a wheelbarrow and we wheel it over to our neighbor's swimming pool. Then we pulled out buckets of water to flush our toilets. And then we had a different system for getting drinking water. And yeah, I think our ability to set those up in a way that can make it a little bit easier. And then paying attention to like, okay, when do I need to be creative? When do I need to just do what's already been, you know, working is really, really important. I'm just using the hurricane as an example because it's so fresh on my mind, but I think this applies to any situation where we have like this new stress coming in.
So when we talk about system, we are a lot focused on the relationship systems. How we infect one another either with more anxiety or more calm confidence. And so if you can, and the leader can be anybody, it doesn't have to be the person with the title, but like in the example of the hurricane, I'm picturing you and your spouse as bringing a calm confidence to the situation, which allows you to be creative, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what it takes is you have to manage your own anxiety first because it will spread. And once it spreads, it makes it hard for people to do all the things we're talking about. Take risks. Think in flexible ways, you know? Like Irvin was saying, you know, you get tunnel vision and you want to go with like the quick fix and da-da-da, you know?
Yeah, I think, yes, I get what you're saying, those relationship systems. I think, you know, how any of us react or act impacts the people around us. And I've definitely many times found myself like in these stressful moments, and I'm sure you all have this experience where your initial reaction is just like, rah, like, you know, your stress is just coming out and you might like bark at someone or be rude. And I remember like during this hurricane in particular, catching myself and realizing like, hold on, I don't need to express that to the people I'm with right now. Like, that's not helpful here. Like, dial back the anxiety, at least the external anxiety, you know?
self-regulation there.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. A little self-regulation. Yeah.
And Irvin, you're going to be more aware of where we are in this time-wise, but there's just one more question I'm curious about. Maybe you can just give our listeners a hint of this.
And then
they can find out more if they want in your book. But in that Venn diagram that you were talking about, the one that was about creative systems, mm-hmm. is there anything you can give our listeners about that system? And then, like I said, they could find out more in the book.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's called the team creative process. So it's the process that you're following. And there are many creative processes out there. The one that I tend to use the most is called creative problem solving. Not a very creative name, but very descriptive. And it's simply a four-stage process that we have all done before, because it's codified based on how we humans naturally solve problems. So the four stages are simply clarify what's the situation, what are you trying to do, what's going on, clarify, ideate, generate the ideas, hopefully lots of ideas and unique, diverse ideas, clarify, ideate, develop. So I often say that when an idea comes out of our mouth, out of our head, it's as in-depth as what'll fit on a post-it note. Like, it doesn't really mean a lot yet. So you got to develop it out further. Like, what would this look like? How much would it cost? That kind of thing. And then finally implementing that idea, which might be prototyping or doing a pilot or just starting on a small scale. So clarify, ideate, develop, implement. And when you follow those four stages, you follow that process, you will be more creative. Like, there is 5 decades of research that says this process leads to more creative and innovative ideas and results.
Love it.
Yeah, you know, I love this. I love the breakdown of putting a system and process in place, because I do think that so many people, you know, really going back to the beginning of what we were talking about, don't feel they are creative, or even what we associate with creativity is a little bit of scattered all over the place and can feel like that. And I think, you know, to really boil it, actually, no, there's a system here, and here's each step of the system. I think that is something which is actually exciting, and I think many leaders would find really beneficial. This has been a great conversation, but maybe to wrap up, if there was one or two nuggets from the book or one or two things that would really speak to our audience of leaders and around the idea of creativity, what would be one or two little nuggets you would say to them?
I think the big nugget from the book is that creativity will not happen by accident. And the phrase that I use a lot is be deliberate to be creative. Mm-hmm. And if you want to be, you know, you got to have that intentionality. You got to be deliberate if you want to innovate. And that's where most teams, most organizations, I think, are missing. And I try to lay out a pretty clear process so that they can, you know, apply this system and be more creative. That's the big takeaway.
Love it. I love it. Be deliberate. So, Amy, I'm sure this is going to fall on ears that are curious and want to learn more, because this is an issue that so many of our listeners are dealing with their teams, or else they're part of a team. So if people wanted to learn more, how did they get your book? And if they wanted more information on you, let our listeners know how they might be able to do that.
Sure. You can find me on my website, which is climberconsulting.com. And climber is spelled C-L-I-M-E-R. There's no B. And you can find the book on there. There's a little book tab at the top. And you can also find it anywhere books are sold. And it's called Deliberate Creative Teams, How to Lead for Innovative Results.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. Yeah. Thank you for generating such a rich discussion. I'm coming away with a few nuggets which I need to chew upon, and I'm loving these ideas of, first of all, that kind of that the purpose, the dynamics, and the creative process. I love that. Mm. I love the process, that creativity is a process. And then I love this, you know, clarify, ideate, develop, implement as well. So, Bridget, any thoughts for you?
Well, just the affirmation that we're actually all innately creative. Mm. Mm-hmm. And that we just have to be deliberate about it, as you said. And we also have to set up the circumstances, mm-hmm. right, with our teams that allow for what is innate in us to come forward. And that's such a powerful reminder. You can't just show up and expect people to push a button and suddenly come out with these amazing ideas. There's a foundational piece to this that's so important.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Amy. I love it. This is a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So if you want to explore the world of creativity, especially in teams, the book is called Deliberate Creative Teams, How to Lead for Innovative Results. And Amy Clymer is the author. Amy, thank you so much. Thank you so much, listeners. We look forward to being with you in the next episode. Take care.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.